Hi, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Ulster, and this is the All Access Star Trek podcast. Today, we are going to be discussing the latest big news that just dropped about Strange New Worlds, casting announcements, and otherwise. But first, we are going to cover the news. So let's start with an update on the Voyager documentary.
So this launched a couple weeks ago, I think on March 1st, the funding campaign. And the funding is going much faster than it went for the DS9 doc. And in fact, it's already surpassed it. So they've passed 750,000, which was their seventh stretch goal, I think. And they're currently approaching 800,000. And so they finally announced that the new stretch goals are they are looking to remaster segments of Star Trek Voyager in HD for the documentary. They want to hit 900,000 to have all the scenes that they want to include to be in HD. If they don't get to 900, they are shooting for some, whatever that means.
And they have the caveat that all of that is pending confirmation from CBS. They're doing some negotiations now, but they're working in cooperation.
I mean, it wasn't a problem for the DS9 doc. I'm not sure why, you know, unless something has changed. The shows DS9, TNG, and Voyager were all shot roughly the same. There's more CGI in Voyager. I'm not sure if that makes things easier or harder when it comes to remastering in HD. It is strange that they had that caveat, which means they haven't nailed this down 100% yet with CBS.
But that could mean they have it 90%. I mean, they just need the caveat just in case things don't work out. But I don't think it's in jeopardy.
Yeah, that's how I understand it. But, you know, there's fine print. And that's, you know, so that's noteworthy. Now, if they get to 1 million, they're saying, I don't even understand what this means, but they're saying if they get to 1 million, there's going to be a secret surprise, special, exclusive, never before seen Voyager surprise.
And they're just calling it a Voyager surprise with no details.
I mean, that could be
I was going to say they're all coming to my house.
It could be footage we've never seen before. It could be them visiting your house. I mean, that makes sense that they would want to do that.
Totally.
If you want to go crazy, they're saying 100,000 for this because it's for difference between 900,000 and 1 million. So what can you do with the $100,000? You know, could they shoot some kind of new
Captain Proton? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, see, I don't want to go there because it seems, I don't think you could do that for 100,000. Unless it's really short.
Very short. I was going to say it could be very short.
But, you know, there's a lot that goes into something no matter how short it is, because you still need hair and makeup and cameras and people. And
sets, lighting, people. Yeah, you need everything and it all costs money.
You could do like a scene with two characters maybe, and you know, virtual background. I mean, so you know, if there's something new, it's not going to be elaborate, but maybe. But I think it's some old footage that has never been seen.
It could be more stuff with Genevieve Bujold. Maybe it's something like from that, which would be interesting to see. I mean, there are little bits of it around on YouTube that you can find, but that would be sort of cool. I'm sure there's stuff that was taken out and all kinds of deleted whatnot that's somewhere.
So there's still a couple weeks left. There's still time for you to get all sorts of perks and, you know, get first access to it. This week, David Sapone was supposed to be our special guest, but he had to reschedule. So that's going to be next week. So our next podcast, we'll ask him these questions, and that'll come out a few days before the campaign wraps up.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We have a lot of questions.
no, I mean, we're very excited about this, and therefore we have a lot of questions.
Yes, exactly. They're all good questions from people who are very interested. Not confrontational questions.
And some fans have been suggesting some questions on the site, and you could do so in the comments for this article as well. So,
oh yeah, please do.
What's next? So WonderCon is not happening in person, of course. WonderCon is the other convention put on by Comic-Con International besides San Diego Comic-Con. It's usually held in Anaheim, kind of a lower key event, but CBS have used WonderCon to do official announcements and events. Remember a few years ago, there was that scene with Michelle Yeoh that was called the bonus scene, the season one bonus scene.
Yeah.
That was revealed at WonderCon at an official CBS panel full of, you know, celebrities. Anyway, so we were kind of hoping there would be a Star Trek Universe panel, even for the virtual WonderCon. Or what they're calling WonderCon at home. And there is a CBS official panel, but it's about the science of various CBS shows, including Star Trek. Anthony Rapp from Discovery is going to be hosting it. And the science advisor for Discovery is going to be on it, as well as the science advisors for MacGyver and some other shows. So I'm not sure we should be expecting anything new coming out, although it's possible, from WonderCon this year.
But there are some other Star Trek panels that people might be interested in. There's a look at Broken Bow, the Enterprise pilot, with the director James L. Conway and with Dominic Keating. There's a panel about the Voyager documentary. There's some sort of topic focused one. There's one about law and trials in Star Trek, one about mental health. There's like a more general music panel that Jeff Russo is going to be on, that Emily Kootz is moderating. There's actually a panel about the division in fandom, which is kind of interesting, asking, I think, if it's generational or what's going on.
Yeah, and you could watch all these panels from the comfort of your own home, and they're all free, so that's great. They've already actually recorded the one for the science panel, because Anthony Rapp tweeted about having a good time doing it. So
yeah, the Enterprise one too, they mentioned some of the specific things that get discussed. So at least some of this has been pre-recorded.
Which was the case for the Comic-Con at home last summer. If you guys remember, that was okay, but not that exciting, even though there was some official stuff, because it was kind of so canned and a little less
very produced.
Very produced. But that at least had some new content released. There was a trailer or something. There was something that they released at Comic-Con, didn't they? I forget.
There was, I think. I just wanted to give the dates, sorry, so that people know what they are, which is Friday, March 26th and Saturday, March 27th.
We're running out of dates of events where they would normally roll out things, because I keep on thinking, when are they going to put out the first trailer for Prodigy, right? And they could just put it out any time, but this would have been a time, because you've got Comic-Con's not until July, which seems almost late for Prodigy, right? And then you've got the Star Trek Las Vegas is no longer Star Trek Las Vegas, so they're not going to do it then, even though that event is going to happen in August. It's no longer a licensed event. Star Trek Day is in September, and then New York Comic Con is probably going to actually happen as a physical thing. So
yeah,
San Diego Comic Con is going to be virtual. But New York Comic Con in October, I'm betting that's going to be like a real in-person thing.
I think it might be. And I think Vegas might also has a shot at being in person. So there's a lot coming up that's virtual, and then hopefully soon in person, and lots of interesting topics.
But when do you think they're going to put out the Prodigy trailer? Well, first of all, we're assuming Prodigy's the next show to drop before Lower Decks, right? So,
I mean, my thought would have been Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con at home. Seems like the place, because it's big and splashy and there's a ton of media paying attention.
Right. But if they roll out a trailer, that's a trailer in July. So the first time we actually see the show is in July, which means it drops it doesn't drop in Q2. So right. You're thinking it drops in Q3, because they said that we're getting the plan for Star Trek Universe is one thing on Paramount Plus every quarter. Now, obviously, Q1 2021 is not in that list because of COVID. But they've said that this year we're getting Lower Decks Season 2, Prodigy Season 1, and supposedly Discovery Season 4, which, you know, if that happens, it's probably very late.
Yeah, I would think end of the year for that.
Right. So do they drop both animated shows in Q3?
They might, given that the audiences for those two shows are very different.
Yeah, that's possible.
I mean, separate from the fact that Star Trek fans like you and me will be watching whatever comes out, no matter what it is and who it's for. But they are very different audiences, so it wouldn't... There's no issue with those things going at the same time, around the same time.
I was kind of hoping that we would see Prodigy by June, at least starting by June. But
I mean,
it won't start until August or September. Okay, so one little bit of merchandise news related to the Star Trek universe is the announcement of a brand new book all about everyone's favorite cat, Grudge.
It's not even about Grudge. It's supposed to be from Grudge's point of view.
Right, exactly.
It's sort of by Grudge, in a way.
In a way, I mean, it's described as nonfiction, but it's also described as looking at Star Trek
through a cat's eyes.
Yeah. It's supposedly going to be in a scrapbook style, and it's got offbeat observations. So these are the observations of a cat, I guess. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, it says what Grudge the cat really thinks of the planets, the ships, and all the people she meets in the course of her travels.
Right. What are they calling it again?
The Book of Grudge.
Books. Cat from Star Trek Discovery.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the funny thing is, if you look at the full title, it says Star Trek Discovery, The Book of Grudge, Books Cat from Star Trek Discovery. So, I mean,
just in case,
The Book of Grudge and his name is Book, and they say Star Trek Discovery twice, just in case. So, just making sure that the branding is on point.
I doubt it's going to be written out that way on the final title, although that would be funny if it were.
Yeah. But it's written by Rob Perlman, who's done some other fun Star Trek humor books. So it will be playful and silly.
It's a fun bit of merchandise. Now, what's funny is a lot of fans like Grudge was only added to the show to sell merchandise. And Grudge was overhyped. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
Absolutely overhyped. And we fell for it. We ran an article. They did a panel. We ran a whole article about how Star Trek's newest star is a cat. Then we read a theory article all about the cat. It's fun. But, Grudge was just kind of there. Maybe more prominent than Spot or Porthos, but not much more, right?
Well, more involved in the plot, because Grudge was able to take the ship back
once. But Porthos had some actual plot lines on Enterprise.
That's true,
but Porthos didn't. Well, I guess that's before social media, but they
and
they
Spot kind of saved the ship once,
yeah,
in Genesis, I think it was.
They really aren't. They wanted a baby Yoda, obviously.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, is that they were looking for that. And so we all started speculating that Grudge was much more than a cat, because, baby Yoda is baby Yoda and has some cool powers. And so far, Grudge has proven to be just a big old cat.
Right. And there really isn't. They aren't doing this to sell merchandise. The whole point of Grudge is to create memes and build up the show.
They're doing
one book, but you can't buy a Grudge plush you look at how much Baby Yoda merchandise there is, and there's a lot. I think there's some Grudge t-shirts at the website, but there's not, you know, it is, Grudge is not there to sell merchandise because there really isn't that much.
They need to make a giant plush Grudge. Like, it has to be huge to be interesting. That's what
bigger than actual size, you're saying.
Like, well, I'm saying, like, this, you know, at least as big as actual Grudge seems to be. But I think I would go for big novelty oversized Grudge merchandise.
Like a body pillow size?
Yes, body Grudge. Pillow size for the plush, and then also a cardboard cutout.
But I think like, because a Maine Coon is a big cat, so even just a like an actual size Grudge would be fun.
It'd be like three times the size of my actual cat that I have here.
We've got one other little site reminder, which is last week we previewed a lot of stuff from my Nicholas Meyer interview. The full text of the interviews up on the website, and so you know, just check that out.
It's so good. There's so much that he covers and talks about, and the way he answers questions, as anyone knows who listened to our podcast last week when we played some excerpts from it. He's a very articulate, intelligent man with very strong opinions, and he decides how much he's going to tell you. And that's that.
One thing that surprised me in that was, I asked him about Christopher Plummer. I always thought William Shatner had some involvement in the casting of Christopher Plummer, right? Because they were close and, you know, had this mentor relationship going.
Canadian bond.
Yeah, but apparently that had nothing to do with it. It was all because Nicholas Meyer was listening to a Christopher Plummer recording of Henry V at the time they were doing casting. And so he's like, he kind of wrote a character for Christopher Plummer, this Shakespeare spouting Klingon, and said, get me Christopher Plummer. And Mary Jo Slater, Christian Slater's mother, said, sure. And then she put her son in the movie too.
Yeah, which was excellent. He was so happy to be in there too. That's the right reason. Put in it, you know, it's great. It's very smart. But the interview's well worth reading, and people should go check it out. There's a lot of good detail in there, and just even talks briefly about Discovery, sort of, for a couple sentences.
There's a lot of comings and goings. Yes. That was a nice way of putting it.
Yes.
That's how he described the first year on Star Trek Discoveries. And I like how he adds, I served out my time, as if it were you were sentenced to working on Star Trek Discovery Season 1. I mean, someday the Star Trek Discovery Season 1
behind the scenes
thing will come out. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot like the first season of The Next Generation.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
Which David Zappone made what was the name of the documentary? Chaos on the Bridge.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, there was definitely chaos on the bridge. And Nicholas Meyer was, you know, caught up in the chaos and was happy to put it behind him.
So. Right. Well, because he was hired by Brian Fuller, I believe. Right?
Right.
And then Brian was gone.
Yeah, a lot of the people who were brought in by, I don't think anyone who was brought in by Brian is still there, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are some people who've been there from the beginning, and I don't know specifically who brought them in. But anyone that I know specifically was brought in by him is gone.
Right, like he brought in Kemp Powers, who's a playwright, and he's gone. Aaron and Gretchen. But Kemp, just as a side note on Kemp Powers, he was just nominated for an Academy Award. So, you know, and kind of too, because he wrote Soul, which was nominated for Best Animated, and he also wrote A Night in Paris, which was nominated for Best Screenplay. So
Miami.
Sorry. Night in Miami. Why did I say A Night in Paris? Night in Miami.
I'll take
anyway. He knows what he's doing, right? But
yes.
He's gone. Minoski was there. He's gone. There was a lot of great talent on hand for season one, and somehow that just didn't mesh and they didn't all work well together. And they obviously Brian didn't work well with CBS. So it would definitely make for a good documentary subject and book someday.
No, there's a lot of crazy. Even the little stuff that we know is pretty intriguing.
We'll have to ask Sapone what's next. I think they are going to do an Enterprise documentary.
Right.
And there's some interesting stories there, but I wonder if 5, 6, 10 years from now, they'll still be at it, and that'll be the time to finally do the Chaos on the Disco Bridge documentary.
Right. I think that'll be hard because it's still so fresh.
Right. And people still don't want to talk on the record.
Because they still want to keep working, which I understand.
Exactly.
We all like being employed. So, but there's definitely a lot to go into on that. That affected specific episodes and how they were made, as well as the tone of what was going on behind the scenes.
Right. I mean, we know that Nick wrote one of the versions of the pilot, right? Or at least, I think he wrote the second hour of one of the pilot scripts, for example. And,
right.
You know, that never happened. So everything got rewritten, everything. You know, there was a lot of examples of that in season one. So this is all, well, you know, we weren't doing the show back then. So now we're kind of retro. We need to do a Discovery season one podcast where we just talk about season one.
I mean, I was working on After Trek that whole season, so I was getting a, you know, not, I wouldn't say like a front row seat because I wasn't there with all those people hearing all the secrets, but I certainly was privy to a lot of their planning and strategy and what was going on and how things were changed.
So for this week, our kind of main topic, we're going to focus on the biggest news that's happened in the last week, which was the announcement of 5 new cast members for Strange New Worlds and some other information that came out about the show.
Finally.
Finally.
Finally. You know, we've been waiting on the cast. We've only known about those 3 cast members, the main ones, for so long. And we've all been waiting to see how they're going to fill out the rest of the crew. So now we have an inkling.
I mean, we reported a month ago that the show was about to go into production. I forget what the actual start date was, but it was in February when they actually started shooting. And this was CBS announcing the start of production and cast. So it's just kind of, they waited 3 or 4 weeks to do what they would usually do right around when they actually started. So yeah. We're learning a little bit more about the pilot episode. It was confirmed that Akiva, who's one of the co-showrunners, Akiva Goldsman, is directing it, or did direct it. And he wrote it. I think he has a solo writing credit, right?
So it's Alex Kurtzman, Jenny Lumet, and Akiva, I think, came up with the story. And then I think it said Akiva is writing.
Yeah, so he wrote and directed the pilot based on a story that he wrote with Jenny and Alex. So the co-showrunner, which is Henry Alonzo Myers, he wasn't involved in the pilot. I mean, he was obviously involved, I was surprised he didn't have a co-writer credit on the first episode. But
I mean,
I'm
not super surprised, only because I feel like this is like the show Akiva has been waiting to do forever.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to have his signature all over. Because pilot episodes are so important in setting the tone of a show and just really everything. And
Star Trek doesn't have a history of great pilots. I mean, I think the Deep Space Nine pilot is extraordinary. But I think... Like Next Generation pilot isn't great. Discovery pilot isn't great.
Isn't even a pilot. It's like a movie that takes place before the pilot. The pilot actually is the third episode, which was directed by Akiva, actually. And is actually a better pilot, I think, than the first 2 episodes, which still to me feel like this kind of prequel movie to the show,
right. Which they knew that it kind of was, but it was a tough choice, I think, in terms of airing, though, because those aired on CBS And then the rest of the show was behind the wall, and that didn't match what people had seen. Anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But they're very excited, is what we know. Akiva is talking about, like, he gets to haunt the stockrooms of his favorite candy store. So he is super excited, and I expect to see a lot of little nods and Easter eggy things that he loves to throw in there.
Yeah, and the other showrunner is talking about how he's always wanted to work in space. You know, so the people who work on the show are all, well, they're not all, but a lot of the writers, the two showrunners and some of the other writers, are fans of the show. We did our Strange New Worlds preview episode a few weeks ago, and so I'm excited about the behind the scenes people. I think they've got a lot of the right people in place for this show. There's a new synopsis, I think, new-ish. Do you want to read it out? Just,
it's not super revealing.
Yeah, it's basically Pike and friends on the Enterprise in the years before Captain Kirk boarded the USS Enterprise. That's basically as they explore new worlds around the galaxy.
Now, I'm assuming that this is taking place after the events of Discovery that they were involved in, as opposed to before that.
Right. I mean, it explicitly says in the years before Captain Kirk boarded the U.S. Enterprise. I think that it is the kind of thinking, it's the 7 years that it would take between Discovery Season 2 and Where No Man Has Gone Before, which was the second pilot, which is the first pilot with Shatner as Kirk, right? So,
right.
So
that means the cage has already happened. It's in the past as it was on Discovery.
Right. It's 3 years roughly. And I assume they're going to pick up very close to the end of season two, just so they could give themselves as much runway as possible between the start of the show and James T. Kirk, who should never show up on the show. Or we've talked about that before.
We've had that conversation. I've had it in my mind fairly regularly also. And then before we get into the new cast members, just talking about our three main ones, I have to say that I'm happy they put out a video that shows our three main cast members plus the five new ones all talking about how they're starting production and they're excited. And one of the things I was very happy to see in that video is that Ethan Peck has properly shaved eyebrows. He is going full Spock. And I think what was dismaying to me in the short Trek specifically was that they just didn't go all out on the makeup and the eyebrows and the whole thing. And it just didn't look that good.
Right. And Rebecca's dyed her hair black.
Yes. So I think the look will be a lot better. I mean, I get the reasoning of it, which is that's a lot to ask somebody for a little 20-minute short that you're doing. But it does make a huge difference, and I found it somewhat distracting in the short treks. So I'm happy that they're really going for it. And it's also something that the show is, well, you know, that the franchise is well known for fantastic makeup.
Now, I assume it's the same on the show, but Anson's hair definitely looks a little grayer than it did on the show. But maybe that's just me.
Well, some time has passed.
He's shaved his COVID beard for sure.
Yep. And he's got the biggest, happiest grin on his face. This is a guy who's got his dream job. He's so happy.
He sent out this great tweet last week about how the real star of the show is the USS Enterprise. And he showed the original Enterprise in his tweet. And, you know, he's definitely humbled to be part of the show and part of this franchise and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that's for sure. They're all very excited. So it's hard not to feel the same excitement when you're watching them talk about it.
Yeah, this is, I think, for a lot of fans, I know for myself, I'm really looking forward to this.
And me too.
I've even seen, you know, there's detractors out there who are at least open-minded to this show. People who don't like Picard or Disco, but because they're saying all the right things. This is going to be traditional Star Trek.
Right.
This is going to be just like the good old days, basically, this is going to be episodic and optimistic and, you know, all those things. This may be the most fan servicey of them, you know, just its own existence and structure. I don't necessarily think they're going to fill episodes with, you know, references to, you know, obscure things that only fans like. We've got Lower Decks for that, you know.
Right.
It's just that the way it'll feel like Star Trek more is, I think, or at least feel what Akiva thinks Star Trek feels like.
So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't always share the same view of what Star Trek is with some of those guys.
Yes.
So, but, you know, and I also don't always love the throwing in of familiar things. And I hope that they'll find a way to resist some of that.
So the bulk of the news was 5 new actors were announced. And this is important wording. They were announced as series regulars. So these aren't guest stars. These are main cast.
Decoys.
Right. Right.
I just wanted to help, like, early with Discovery, when they started announcing cast members, they were basically announcing everybody that showed up in those first 2 episodes as if they were very, very important to the series. And they sometimes just had a couple scenes and a few lines and then they were done.
Right. So like this played T'Kuvma and the guy who played the Admiral who died, you know. And
the Doctor. Yeah, there were a lot of people that came and went very quickly. So these are actually regular cast members. Series regulars.
And there's, in addition to the 3, so that adds up to a total of 8, which is a pretty big cast, actually, more than Discovery, really.
Yes.
You know, depending on how you consider the bridge crew. The question is, are these people going to be in the main credits or not? Because they're calling them series regulars, which would imply they would be, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case. But we'll see.
I think they, I don't know. I was going to say, I think they will be. And then I just started going through in my mind, like picturing all the credits of all the.
I mean, they've got to, you know, are they going to have 27 executive producers? So, you know, you never know with Star Trek shows.
That's true. There are usually a lot of those to get through.
So I think they're going to tone that down for this series. I don't think there's that as many, because Picard didn't have Discovery's the one that just, it seems like everyone's a producer. So let's go through the 5 actors announced.
I was unfamiliar with all of them, I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, when they announced the Picard actors, and they did this in 2 groups, they first announced Michelle Hurd, and they announced her along with Cabrera, and both familiar, at least to me, and I think to a lot of people, right? Especially Michelle Hurd.
I've been a fan of hers for a very, very long time.
Right.
So she's done a lot of work.
So, but I mean, some of them I'm like, oh yeah, you know, because some of these were in, couple of them were in episodes of Black Mirror. And it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. And one was in a Doctor Who episode, but no major characters, no, you know, but all of them have solid acting backgrounds, and a good amount of credits. So let's go through them one at a time. Let's start, you know, we're going to butcher some of these names, or at least
particularly one. Here we go. You can Tony.
Okay, well, like his first name, it says is Babs, like, you know,
like Barbara Streisand. I like to call her Babs.
Babs. Olusegun Mokin. He's born in Nigeria, so he's got a Nigerian name. Okay, he's 35. But he's an American, and
he's based in New York, and he's a jiu-jitsu master.
Yeah, black belt.
Yeah.
So he, you know, years ago he was teaching. Not sure he's still doing that, but you know, it's a big part of his life. He's got a lot of good credits. He had a nice recurring role on Defenders. I kind of remembered that. More than anything else. That was one of those Marvel Netflix shows when they were still doing those. He's in the new Dune movie.
Yeah.
And so he, I think he's a, from what I remember and from seeing him, he's a pretty solid actor, very serious guy. And, or serious seeming guy. He's one of those, he could be hilarious, but he plays serious roles and he has that kind of look, I think.
So do you have any thoughts yet on who he is likely to be? And this, like, do you think he'll be a familiar character, brand new character?
Well, this gets to a bigger issue. So they start, you know, the show is created around three characters from the Cage, obviously Spock and Pike and Number One, two of which only appeared in the Cage. And so you start thinking, okay, we're going to fill out our main cast of characters. Do we look to the Cage or other elements of Star Trek to have to fill out the rest? And I think there's going to, I think they might do it with one, maybe two,
mm-hmm.
but definitely not more than two. And yeah, I think maybe only one, and maybe, I still think that all five of these, let's back up. They didn't name any characters. So that's why we're speculating, because we know nothing about what these people are playing. So if you think about showrunners and Akiva, you know, they want to create characters. So they may just want to have five new characters, and you wouldn't begrudge them for doing that. Part of me hopes, even though we're going to play the, could it be this, could it be that, I kind of hope they're all new characters, to be perfectly honest.
Here's the thing. Even if they choose a character that we've seen on screen, let's say in the Cage, I still think they have complete freedom. Those characters were not developed. They were in one episode. So they certainly have a chance to...
But there's a very limited amount of Cage characters that these actors could be. Because yes. 90% of the characters in the Cage were white men, and none of these new actors are white men.
But that's
so that
what
eliminates
I think
all
they
of those
could,
possibilities.
I think they could change that too, though. I don't think they have to think that way at all. So I think if they wanted to give one of those characters an existing, they could. It wouldn't matter if the original actor was white. I don't think it would matter to them at all. And I do, shouldn't matter.
So you think that Babs could be playing, like,
the doctor.
Dr. Boyce?
Sure. I don't actually think he is, if he's Mr. Action Jiu-Jitsu
guy.
No,
but you think that would be okay,
yes,
for them to hire a black
yes,
actor to play Dr. Boyce?
Yeah, or
so
any...
I mean...
Or a woman. Or any... Like, I honestly think they could play with that, and I don't think it matters.
I totally disagree. I think that, and this is one thing that, you know, JJ and they play around with ages a little bit, but generally sex and ethnicity, they try to match it up because they're saying it's the same universe, especially in this case, because at least JJ had a different timeline, or that shouldn't change. They're saying this is the same universe, so it's different than Ron Moore rebooting. I mean, I'm okay for what Ron Moore did when he rebooted Battlestar Galactica, because he was taking character types, but then he got to play around with them a little bit. But if you're saying this is the Star Trek universe, then, and it's the, you know, same canon and the same prime universe, then I don't think you could change someone's gender. And I don't think you could go from a white actor to a black actor. I think,
okay,
why would you do that? You would just create a new character. Why not just create a new character?
I'll roll back on the gender thing, but I think with race and skin color, I don't think it would matter at all. I think that in a way, I kind of hope that they do something like that. Gender would be pretty extreme, so I'll pull that one back. But I don't think
you have
it would
to
be
have
a big deal.
I think it would be. And I think fans would, especially because the whole point of this is to be very fan friendly. So I don't think, because they haven't done, this is something that they haven't done in Star Trek. It would be the first time that a character in Star Trek was cast with a new actor that was, you know, not a match, as they would say. And I think there would be a negative fan reaction, and it's not worth it, because there's no character from the Cage or from the original series that's so important to include that they would, you know, go to the trouble of doing that. I don't see that. Especially because, so if we're going to talk about Babs in particular, I think it's quite possible that he's playing someone we do know who didn't appear in either of the two pilots or in the first season, which is Dr. Mbenga, who appeared only in the second season of Star Trek, the original series. But I still feel is a kind of an interesting character, a very strong character. And, you know, he had his own opinions and he's very memorable. I mean, there's a lot of characters who appeared in a dozen or more Star Trek episodes and you know nothing about them. They're more essentially background characters. Whereas Mbenga was only in two episodes. And so we've talked about this before. I don't think, so let's talk about, you get to Mbenga because of Boyce. Because you look at who Boyce was in the cage. Boyce was the confidant of Captain Pike. I don't think they want a character like that added to the cast because they've got Rebecca and Number One, who I think is now going to be Pike's biggest confidant. Because they've talked about the relationship between Pike and Number One and Spock as two parents and, you know, a child, essentially, or, you know, a sibling, not a sibling, you know, but a parent-child relationship between the three of them. That's the dynamic they've described. So those two are going to be very close. So, you know, Dr. Boyce wouldn't fit into that dynamic because he would be, you know, unless he's the crazy uncle. But, you know, I feel like, so then if you don't have a Dr. Boyce on the show, then, but your ship still needs a doctor. You could have a new doctor character, which would be fine. But, you know, why not Dr. Mbenga? And he's, you know, so he could still be an interesting character. He could have his own stories, but he doesn't necessarily have this close relationship with Captain Pike where he's pouring his heart out to Pike and serving him drinks and all that kind of stuff.
And I loved Mbenga. He really stood out in his episodes. He was so memorable and did things his own way. They really made him very different from Dr. McCoy.
Yeah. Babs that might actually be a little too old, to, you know, if you really want to kind of match things up. But I think that they could, that's where I'm kind of okay with them. Because we're still a few years before season two, right? And would he be the chief medical officer? Because he'd be younger. But I think they could, that's where they can fudge around a little bit. So that's a possibility, but he could be an entirely new character,
yeah,
an entirely separate character. Okay, let's move on to our. I would say he has the there's two of these actors they announced that have the most extensive experience. And the second one is Christina Chong, who's British. She's 38. And she herself has extensive credits going back years. Genre fans may remember she had a recurring role on Dominion, which was that sci-fi show about angels. She's in the new Tom and Jerry movie. She also was in an episode of Black Mirror. She's a major part of the new, to show you how British she is, she's kind of the face of Jaguar in a new campaign they've got going. So she's got that kind of, she's kind of sophisticated looking.
She looks beautiful, you know, and sophisticated. Definitely.
Yeah. I really, you know, in her case, I can't, I don't see a character from, certainly from neither of the pilots or the original, but even the original series where I go, oh, she could be playing that person.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think her character is likely to be totally new.
Yeah. Which, you know, as we're saying, we're kind of, you know, even though we want to play this game of who could they be, my goal is they're all great, new, interesting characters. I mean, you look at Star Trek Discovery when they announced the actors and, you know, who knew Mary? Because I remember when they announced like Mary Wiseman and she's going to be playing this character Tillian. I thought it was going to be a minor character because she didn't have a lot of experience, and Tilly's turned out to be this major part of the show.
Yeah, she's kind of the heart of it in some ways.
you know, and a great character. So I'm hoping they're creating some great and interesting characters, and we shouldn't necessarily look at some, you know, some of these actors and say, well, they don't have a lot of experience. They're not going to be a big part of the show. Although Christina Chong doesn't fit into that. She's got a lot of experience.
And she's looks like she's, you could transform her into an alien with some subtle, you know, like not, I don't, she's not going to be Bajoran obviously, but you could do like a small nose thing or spots, or there are a lot of things that you could do where she would still look gorgeous, which she appears to be, but also have something else going on.
Something a little Vulcan about her as well. Don't know.
She has that that narrow face.
Yeah. I don't know if they want other Vulcans on the shows, but why not? You know,
I have a rule that I think all Vulcans should have narrow faces.
Fair enough.
Just my personal aesthetic.
The next actress is another interesting selection. So it's Celia Rose Gooding, who's very young. She's only 21. She's an American black actress who's never done anything in TV or film. She's only been on the stage, but she's been in very high profile performance, A Jagged Little Pill on Broadway, which is a musical. And
it was shut down by COVID. It was still running when COVID hit.
Yeah.
And then they had to stop it. But she has a great theater background. So her mom is actually a Tony Award winner for The Color Purple. She was the lead in that. And she's a dancer. She was at the Alvin Ailey Institute. She actually left high school, I think, so that she could help develop Jagged Little Pill. Like she originated the role that she has. So she got started very, very young.
Is she related to Cuba Gooding?
She is not, as far as I know. I looked that up. Her father actually died in 9/11.
Oh my God.
Feel like my New York is well represented. We got some good New Yorkers in this, so she's the real deal.
And she is the only member of the cast who is a Grammy winner as of last weekend, because Jagged Little Pill won the Grammy Award for Best Broadway
cast recording or something, right?
Yeah,
cast recording. Yeah.
So, I don't. Does Anthony Rapp must have a Grammy for that too, right? For Rent.
I don't know. Whoopi Goldberg has a Grammy.
So at 21, she is on her way to the EGOT. She's got 1 out of 4. She's got that going for her. Now let's put on our speculation goggles for Celia. There is a character she could be. Okay, so no one in either of the two pilots. But if you look at season one, there's a kind of an obvious character. You go, oh, well, could she be playing Uhura? So before we get into
could Uhura have been on the Enterprise before Kirk? And the answer is sure.
Yeah, you go, well, okay, so in season one, she's a lieutenant. That's in about 4 years. Okay, so here's our first clue. So you kind of go, I'm not sure the age is right. I think we joked on a previous podcast that Uhura's at Starfleet Academy. So when Celia won her Grammy, our friend, we wish she were our friend, but Rebecca Remine sent a congratulations, and Rebecca referred to Celia as a cadet. So now it starts to make a little more sense of a cadet Uhura on the Enterprise, because that kind of works out with the timeline where she's a lieutenant later. So
that could be
fun. And she can sing. So,
and she can sing and dance.
Right. So, I mean, my one issue with this is, I've always thought communications officer is kind of not a very interesting job, and there's really not a lot. So, but that doesn't, certainly on the original series, and Nichelle Nichols talks about this in her documentary, that she had a much bigger role and it kept on getting diminished. So in the end, her job, she kind of just didn't have much to do, which is why she wanted to leave the show.
Right. I mean, at some point she looked like a receptionist. She was, you know, this person's calling. Okay, yeah. Put him through. There was a lot of that.
So if a cadet Uhura is on this show, I guess we would get more storylines about her personal life. Would she even have the job of communications on the bridge?
You know, she could be training to do something else entirely.
Yeah. So they could, you know, there's definitely a lot that could be done with the character, and I think that could be interesting. I still don't think it's necessary. So there's a couple clues where, yeah, they could make this fit. It does appear that she's playing a cadet, and she's young, so it doesn't have to be her, and I think it might actually be more interesting if it's a new character. But I wouldn't be against it being Uhura, I guess, is what I'm saying.
You would or wouldn't?
I would not be against it being Uhura. Right. But I'm still kind of... I like the Mbabanga. So I kind of... I'm on Team Mbabanga for Babs. I'm kind of iffy on Uhura. It's I'll kind of have to see how they go with it. But if she's just another space receptionist, I don't care. You know, I don't want to see, you know, and if you look at Discovery, there is a communications officer and he's kind of not that interesting.
He's also a space receptionist.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to have to do something with the character to make it more interesting.
Or if she is at communications, make that, you know, flesh out what that job is, because sometimes we saw communications officers doing I think Hoshi initially on Enterprise was supposed to do more interesting things than she ended up doing.
Right. We saw this in the JJ movies. They tried to get, there was the romance with Spock, but there was also, she was, you know, translating Romulan and they gave her hero moments in each of the films based on her special, because she had a particular set of skills. There are ways to do this right. And in fact, they did that in the movies, you know, where she was speaking Klingon with Scotty and she was fan dancing. So that there are ways.
If we can avoid the fan dancing and the relationships with other crew members, that would be great. Yeah. 'Cause I think the Spock thing wasn't a great choice. And then in one of the movies, they sort of tried to have her and Scotty having something going on, and no, let's just flesh out that if it's going to be that character, then let's show some history and give us some of her youth.
So the fourth person announced is Jess Bush, or Jessica Bush. She's 29. She's from Australian.
She's from Australian.
She's 29 and she's Australian.
And she was on Australia's Next Top Model.
Yeah. So she's like super beautiful. She's like one of those people where she's got these like crazy piercing eyes where she's like almost intimidatingly beautiful, I think.
Yeah. And in that video, you really, more than the photos, in that video, you really notice her eyes.
So certainly they're not going to bury her under a ton of, she's kind of got the same thing they had when they cast Terry Farrell. Remember, there was originally they were planning on putting a lot of makeup on Terry, and someone at Paramount said, well,
why are we doing that?
Why? don't do that. So they're not going to bury her under, none of these people, like when you cast Doug Jones, you know, you're getting a prosthetic actor. I'm wondering, like, none of these people have that kind of experience. So we may not have like a heavy prosthetic actor in the cast, even though Armin Shimerman and others came on and, you know, did that. So it is, you know, even though that wasn't part of their thing beforehand, I'm going to guess that they aren't going to do that, that there may be aliens in the cast, but none of these people are going to be heavy duty prosthetic actors. That's just a guess.
Yeah. And we also, on the original series and in the Cage, didn't see crew that were radically different from humans.
Right. Although we did see a couple, you know, random bridge officers, I think, in the season two and in the short treks. In fact, I think one was actually called Colt.
Even though there is a
character from Colt, you know, from the pilot named Colt, who had a speaking role, is definitely not an alien. So I think you'll see that in the back, which is the same thing as you see on Discovery. There's some like interesting aliens we've never talked to, although Linus has kind of become a character.
But there's that anyways, big, like, bug-headed one that is always just on the bridge.
Yeah. Jess could be a, you know, they could, but could be an interesting alien as well with some subtle stuff, some spots or whatever. I forget, are the Trill... The Trill are not part of the Federation, I think, in the 23rd century, so that wouldn't make sense. But, you know, something. But she has a, some good experience as well, but not as much as the rest of the team.
But you had an interesting thought that you brought up about who she, a familiar character she could possibly play. I mean, it was your idea, and it made me think about it, and I was like,
well, there's a couple. There's a couple ideas. So first of all, I'm going to kind of. There's some characters that she could be playing, if you were matching types. So in the Cage, there was Colt, Yeoman Colt, we just talked about, and there was also Yeoman Smith in the second pilot, and of course Yeoman Rand in the first season of Star Trek. But, and they're all blonde and, you know, beautiful and all that, and she could fit into any of those, but I'm going to say no, because yeomans are even worse than space receptionists. They're essentially space assistants.
Coffee servers. Waitresses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, I think it would be, even though they're going old school with this, that's kind of a little too Mad Men.
They're not going old school in that way. You can tell just from looking at this cast, they're not going old school in that way. I mean, a lot of this cast is a react. Their three main leads are all white, and they're definitely trying to change some things up.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if someone was called a yeoman and had Pike sign things every once in a while, but you know, having a main character be his assistant would just be weird.
You gotta have someone show up with that clipboard.
Exactly. But I was thinking about the second pilot and Dr. Elizabeth
Daner.
Was it Elizabeth Daner? Or
yes.
Okay.
Played by the famous Sally Kellerman.
Right. And the age actually sort of works out to be about the right age. And Sally Kellerman was, you know, a good actress and beautiful and... It was an interesting character because she had a little bit of ESP, right? And she was a psychologist.
She had piercing eyes. Noticeable eyes. Yeah. No, there's, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do that character, but that would be an interesting choice.
Yeah. And then they could, you know, in this little this little 1980s Star Trek, The Next Generation, because you've got a shrink on board the ship.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just possibilities there. So, I mean, there's elements of Troy, obviously, because you have a shrink with some kind of mental abilities. You could often see Roddenberry working through things. There's characters that he kind of repeats through his different TV shows, including all the shows he did in the 70s. This could be a proto-Troy character, and I don't think they always dealt with her character in the best way, so there may be kind of a different way to do that kind of character.
Yeah. Certainly they deserve another shot at trying to make a ship's counselor who has more to do and is more and has other responsibilities and gets to wear the same uniform as everybody else.
Right. But this whole the whole ESP thing is something they never really got into again, because they were implying that humans had developed this ability essentially by the 23rd century. You know, that some humans had more capability than others, and
right.
I don't think they really picked up on that again. I mean, obviously there were aliens, you know, Vulcans and others who had special mental abilities. So there may be something here to this character, although, you know, she could be an entirely new character.
But right.
That's one possibility I could think of. But now, you know, but I don't want to see Dr. Daner and Mbenga and Uhura, you know, it's because you've already got Spock and One and Pike. You know, we don't need to fill the ship up with the same crew. I want to see something new.
Yeah.
It's literally in the title of the show, Strange New World. So give us one, maybe two at the most.
And then call it a day.
And then, you know, three new interesting characters. So we haven't talked about one of the actresses.
Yeah, there's one more.
So
Melissa. Her name is Melissa Navia or Navia?
Navia. Right.
Navia. She is Colombian American, born and raised in New York. And she's also a martial arts expert.
Right.
In fact, she's done stunts. I saw she has one stunt credit for a short film.
Yeah. She's in her late 20s.
She plays the banjo, by the way.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to come in handy.
I'm not sure she matches any characters. I mean, I guess she could be one of these random yeomen we talked about as well. But again, I'm hoping that's not the case. So I expect this is a new character.
Yeah.
Part of me feels like she would also be a good fit for an alien as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an interesting look. So, but, we really don't, I mean, what do we, here's the thing. What is a good, which roles on the ship would you like to see? Cause we've got the captain, we've got the first officer, and we've got,
science,
I don't know if Spock, yeah, but I don't know if he's like chief science officer at this point or just a science officer. It may be actually that number one is also chief science officer.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know where they're going to go with that.
But Spock is science. So we've talked about.
We need a doctor.
Yeah. Although, you know, of course, we've talked about on Discovery, they've lived for 3 seasons without having a chief engineer.
But since
they
kind of
have one.
Well, they do talk about this in terms of traditional Trek. So I think that is another way to reinforce traditional Trek, which is to have those roles filled by lead characters. So I suspect
we've got a doctor, an engineer, probably like a head of security person. One of these people.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. Melissa might be a good fit for that, maybe. She's maybe a little Tasha Yar-ish. I don't know.
Well, especially if she knows martial arts, like that's such a nice bonus,
right?
To have someone who knows how to do all that fighting.
Right. And I think we may have locked too much into Babs being Mbenga, but obviously with his background, he would be an excellent, you know, person for that as well.
Yes.
He, you know, the jiu-jitsu thing, you know.
And then, I mean, you could say the same, look, the dancer, Celia Rose Gooding is a dancer. And so that also gives you some opportunities there. So who knows?
Fair enough.
She's young.
So that's basically it for what we know, right? There's a couple things that weren't part of the announcement that not surprised people, but kind of clarified a couple things. Some people were thinking that, if you remember, Ask Not was the Short Treks episode with Pike, and he was training or testing a cadet to join engineering. And so some people thought Amrit Kaur who was playing Cadet Thera Sidhu, I guess.
I'm just letting you say all those names.
we might have seen her announced as a cast member, because they did a whole Short Trek about her being recruited and she wasn't on the list. I wouldn't be surprised if she shows up on the show.
I feel like we're going to see her. She's Canadian. I believe she's a Toronto actor. So she's there.
Yeah.
And so it's very likely that we could see her in the background, or she could get a guest episode, or she's just there a lot. Who knows? But I think a lot of people were expecting her, as was I.
Yeah, and I suspect we'll probably be seeing a lot of those bridge people back, but none of them are kind of elevated to the main cast. They're probably just all going to be sitting in their same seats, pushing the same buttons, but right. not saying anything. Something that you kind of can't help but notice with this group of actors is they have used this font, these five, to add diversity to the cast, for sure.
Yes, much needed.
Because we basically had two white guys and a white woman, and so they wanted to make sure that when people look at this crew as a whole, they will, you know, see something that's more reflective of America, more reflective of Star Trek, and but maybe not as, you know, matching what the Cage looked like, which was still very dominated by white men in the right. cast and crew. So,
well, it's 2021.
Well, and the show is going to debut in 2022. So yeah.
Right.
I have zero problem with this. You know, I think a handful of people did, but actually less than I thought we would see in that kind of realm of people freaking out. So I was kind of actually happy that didn't become like this big nerd rage issue online.
Right. Where are all the white guys? What happened? Yeah. No, I'm
yeah.
glad we don't
mean,
to see that.
It's Captain Pike, you know, it's like, I still think this is going to be, I mean, I think these people are interesting. I still feel like the big three are the big three. I think this is going to be a lot like the original series where the big three were the big three. I'm not sure each of these characters are going to be getting their own story. Because if you look at Discovery, everyone's got their stories, right? So we've got, because this show's not severally serialized. So it's hard to give, you may have one episode or so where they give one of these characters a little bit of a story, but it won't be, you know, like, you know, these arcs that they're giving to Stamets and to Culber and all the other characters on Discovery.
Right, but I also think it won't just be they're sitting at their stations and get a couple lines.
No,
you know,
no.
Like,
I mean,
one
they've
of those
got
things
people
we always talk about with the original series, which is who is there every day? Not everybody was there every day. And I think these people will all be there every day.
Yeah, fair enough. And they were announced as series regulars. So, but obviously there's a tiered system here. There's the big three, there's these five, and then there's going to be everyone else. And, you know, and the everyone else will get a line every once in a while. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's entire episodes where one of these five doesn't say a single word. You know, so, which we've seen on Discovery. They've got whole episodes where some of people we consider to be main people get very little, sometimes nothing to say.
All the shows have done that. I mean, as someone who's always on Memory Alpha looking at episodes, it'll say things like, oh, and Scotty wasn't in this one, or Troy wasn't in this one. Or,
right,
you know,
but there's no episode of the original series where Kirk and Spock don't have a lot to say. You know,
right.
They're, I believe, equal amounts as much as Shatner and Nimoy, counting lines, wanted to make sure as much as possible.
Tracking. They were tracking them.
And, you know, and DeForest, I mean, there's some episodes where McCoy's, you know, has very little to do, but he's in there as well. So I feel like that'll be the case, that the big three will always be an important part of every episode. And then one or two of these will kind of flit in and out to have a major part in each episode. That's my guess.
I think it's a pretty good guess.
Any other thoughts on our new cast and crew that we know nothing about except their names and we're just guessing?
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I think we'll have to see what we get next. I'm dying to see clips from this. I really want to know what they're going to do, what it's going to look like, what stories they're going to do. My biggest hope, as we've talked about last time, is just that they'll focus very much on the new in Strange New Worlds.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see an image or two at Comic-Con. Maybe a clip, but nothing. Maybe part of a larger, you know, reel of Star Trek shows. But I bet we won't see a trailer for this show until at the earliest New York Comic Con in October.
Right.
Even if then.
And if not a trailer, a clip, I think we'll get at least photos of these people in their uniforms and in whatever makeup they're going to have.
Right. I think we may start getting who they are, what characters they are by Comic-Con. Yeah. Which would be in July. So that's still a good ways away, right? Mm-hmm. 4 months. So, you know, there's plenty of time. Yes, Strange New Worlds, I suspect, won't show up until Q2 2022, maybe Q1, because they got Picard season 2 in this as their two live action shows in 2022. And not sure which one will go first. What do you think will go first? Because they both started production roughly at the same time. They're both 10 episodes long. So, hard to say.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I don't even know what I would do if I were them. Because you don't want too much time to go between seasons of existing shows. But there's a huge appetite for Strange New Worlds. So it's a tough call.
Because Picard wrapped up in March of last year.
Yeah.
So by March of next year, it'll be 2 years.
It's a long time to go between seasons.
Yeah. And if they wait till June or July or August, you know, that'll be over 2 years between Picards.
I mean, look, obviously a lot of non-Trek TV shows are dealing with the same issue because production was stopped. So there's a lot more time. Shows were cut off in mid-season. Shows aren't coming back for a while. But still, that's a huge stretch, and I could see why they might want to jump in and just get that one going again.
Yep. Okay, so that's it for Strange New Worlds. We ended up taking a lot of time talking about stuff we don't know anything about.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we could talk about something we don't know.
I know, and the truth is that we could end this podcast and the two of us could still talk about it for another hour.
So let's do our Trek Bits of the Week. Mine's just a quick thing. If you remember on this podcast, we talked a couple weeks ago about the launch of Paramount Plus, and there was supposed to be something they were referring to as a mega stunt, and I don't think we ever saw that in the USA, but there was a mega stunt done in Mexico City for the launch of Paramount Plus, which is called Paramount Moss, but down there. But there's Paramount Plus Latin America, which is slightly different. One of the differences in Latin America is they have all the J.J. Abrams movies as part of the offering. And so they did this drone light show announcing Paramount Plus with a lot of the content, and the show kicked off with the narration from Star Trek Beyond of the space. This is Final Frontier, and the drones formed the Enterprise, the classic Enterprise. And it was just really cool to have these, you know, dozens of drones above Mexico City forming the USS Enterprise. And so there'll be a link to that in the show notes where the video for that.
Yeah, it looks very cool. I hadn't watched it until you mentioned it. And then I just thought, oh, I would love to see that above my town. But I thought it looked great. It's exciting.
So what's your bit of the week?
Mine is a Twitter account that I recommend all Star Trek fans who like details should follow this account. So the guy who runs it, and I checked pronunciation, his name is Yerk, which rhymes with Kirk, he pointed out, Hillebrandt. But it's J-O-R-G, and I'll put a link to his account. But basically what he does is he takes a very close-up look at sets. All of his posts that I've seen recently are all Next Generation based. He has a screenshot archive of all the rooms that he started putting together, I think, in 2002. And he compares sets. He talks about how sets changed, how things changed in remasters, how you'll see this element repeated here. And one of the things I like is Mike Akuda comments on his posts a lot. And apparently the two have become friends. He said he's a teacher, and Mike actually helped him with a school project once that he was planning. And he said that whenever he reaches out to like Rick Sternbach, Doug Drexler, John Eaves, all these guys respond. So his information is rock solid, full of details, super nerdy, which I think is fun. It's basically about all things visual. Like he just did a whole series of posts on the Iconian Gateway and Contagion, and he tracked down every single image to figure out what it was.
The level of detail is insane. He's German, and he lives up to every German stereotype of being super detail oriented.
Yeah, he's very organized too. And he said that's a quality of his that he has, is that he's very organized. So, which you would have to be. But he has such love for Star Trek. He's super excited about the new shows, and what he likes to do is post comparing things from older Trek to newer Trek when he finds things that are consistent.
Yeah, you know, obscure aliens in various episodes of Discovery or Lower Decks. He's like, oh yeah, that was this alien that appeared in the background in one episode,
right,
of Next Generation. And you're like, oh.
He notices props, costumes, aliens, everything that's in there. And so he has a good voice of authority. He does very thorough research, and he has a direct line to the experts when he gets stuck.
So thank you again for listening to another hour plus of All Access Star Trek.
Please come to the website, give us comments, talk about things you want us to talk about, things we talked about that made you mad or that you liked. And please leave us reviews on iTunes.
We'll be back next Friday, as we are every Friday, with All Access Star Trek.
See you then.